bottom of the hour, and they're going to kick me out of here. Thanks for giving me a call. Bye now. Ah, yes. Well, all I can tell you is my anecdotal experience and what I've seen around here. I would say Dennis, is, as much as I wish he were, he is not winning from Democrats that I hear from. Anyway, you're listening to the Guy James Show here in the Head On Radio Network. Billy Shears, music director. You heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. See you later.
Congressman Wahab Akbar, who reportedly had ties to an Islamic extremist group. Investigators determined the bomb was placed near Akbar's car, leading to speculation that he may have been the target. In Pakistan, police are arresting supporters of Benazir Bhutto, who are violating the government's ban on public gatherings. Bhutto, again under house arrest, is demanding Pakistani President Pervez Musharraf resign. Musharraf must lift his state of emergency order within 9 days or face suspension from the 53-nation Commonwealth of Britain. Musharraf has also been ordered to live up to his earlier promise to step down as chief of his country's military. In Tehran, the Iranian Supreme Court has upheld the death sentence against a Kurdish journalist accused of providing U.S. intelligence with information on Kurds in Iran. A growing humanitarian crisis in Somalia. At least 70 people have been killed in recent days of intense fighting between government forces and Islamic militants. More than 850,000 Somalis have been displaced. South Korea is asking the U.S., China, and North Korea to begin negotiations aimed at producing an official peace treaty. You're listening to Quality News Network. Science and business next.
It's not hard to find people in need. They're everywhere. And there's more than one kind of disaster that affects people's lives. There's AIDS and the millions of orphans the disease has left behind. There are teeming refugee camps, the result of war and persecution. Mary Knoll has been reaching out to the world's needy for nearly a century. Mary Knoll is there right now, in 40 countries around the world. And with your help, Mary Knoll will be there tomorrow. Call us at 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARY-KNOLL. Or, for more information, go to www.mygiftcounts.org. One world, one mission, Mary-KNOLL.
According to the Centers for Disease Control, the U.S. sets the record in sexually transmitted diseases. More than 1 million cases of chlamydia were reported in the U.S. Gonorrhea is also on the rise. Health officials say the higher rate could be due to better screening. The nation's biggest retailer, Walmart, announced third-quarter profit rose almost 8%, beating estimates. International sales also increased 17%. Walmart raised its full-year outlook heading into the holidays. IBM says it will buy Canadian business intelligence software company Cognos for $5 billion in cash. Crude oil prices fell sharply for the second day, dropping to $90 a barrel at one point. The drop came following an announcement by the International Energy Agency that it will cut its estimate of global oil demand. A survey also showed that OPEC increased oil production in October. And light sweet crude oil is currently trading down $3.45 at $91.71 a barrel. And on Wall Street today, the Dow Jones ended up 322 points at 13,309. The NASDAQ was also up 87 points. And the S&P 500 was up 41 points. We have more news on our website at qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Claudia Eisman.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I am reporting to you from the wonderful city of Washington, D.C., truly a magical place. We have a beltway, a highway that goes around the city, and inside the beltway, I can safely say that things happen, things are believed that happen nowhere else in America. It is a magic bubble. It is a place where, within the confines of the White House, you can actually believe we are winning the war in Iraq. You can believe that we don't actually torture people, because all the ways in which we are cruel, inhumane, and, downright pain-inducing, that's just not torture. It's a magical place where FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, can hire its own reporters to ask its own easy questions of its own officials, and where Mike Brown, Brownie, affectionately known by the president, really is doing a heck of a job. Why does the White House keep giving these falsehoods to itself and to America? And the ultimate question, do they really believe their own lies? This hour I'm going to give you the inside scoop on the greatest lie of our time, the one that has led, at least during the Bush administration, to the greatest number of deaths of Americans and civilians caused by U.S. policy, the lie that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. And the source of that lie, a man that whose real name is Rafid Alwan, but is better known by his nickname, Curveball. The question for this hour is analyzing the White House bubble. Do they really believe their own lies? I was talking with Bob Kincaid right before the broadcast, and he mentioned a Palestinian leader. This, by the way, is not Hamas. These aren't the really bad terrorist guys. These are the guys that Israel is supposed to negotiate with in Annapolis to have a new Palestinian state. But this guy in the Palestinian Authority claims that Jews are not really from Judea. They're not from the land of Israel. The entire Bible is a fake. The Western Wall is a fake. And millions of shards of pottery along with the Dead Sea Scrolls were planted by Israeli officials. This is not a new lie. It's really quite an old lie. It's something that the Arab press has been telling its people for several decades now, that the Jews are a European people, that they have zero ties to the Middle East. Jesus, I guess, was really giving his insights on Lake Geneva or perhaps in the British Isles. Why do I raise this? Because at the time, Bob said to me, and Bob can chime in if he wants to disagree, but I'm leading to a larger point here. Bob said, you know, these guys are crazy. And I said, no, Bob, they're not crazy at all. They're evil. There's a huge difference. You are crazy, you are delusional, if you believe your own lies. Yes, then you're clearly delusional. You're crazy. But if you don't believe the lies, if you know they're false, but you intentionally put a falsehood out there with a political agenda, well, that's not delusional at all. That's not crazy. That's just evil. And the question I have this hour is, to what extent is the Bush administration, we know they're pushing lies, but to what extent are they delusional, and to what extent are they evil? I'll report and let you decide. Again, I'm going to spend most of this hour talking about Curveball, but before we get to Curveball, let's talk about some other recent incidents. You know, of course, that FEMA recently had a fake press conference. Now, do they really think they would get away with this? Apparently, during the California wildfires, they gave reporters 15 minutes to appear in Washington for a press release. And when they didn't appear in the 15 minutes, they allowed reporters to listen by phone call, not ask any questions, as FEMA officials posed their own questions to the number two guy there, Harvey Johnson, who apparently saw nothing wrong with answering fake questions by fake reporters that would be broadcast on the news. Who decided to do this brilliant maneuver? A guy by the name of Pat Philbin. He was in charge of all the public affairs for FEMA, and in fact, he was scheduled to become the Director of Public Affairs for National Intelligence, for National Intelligence Director Mike McConnell. So the guy was the guy that did public affairs for FEMA and did the fake interview. And yet, the question is, did anyone think anyone would fall for this? Was this crazy? Was this delusional? Or was this evil? What is the difference between a fake press conference, between Armstrong Williams being paid off by administration officials to pretend he has his own opinion, but actually to spout the administration agenda? The list, of course, goes on and on. We know of many examples of that. And people who actually start to believe their own lies. When Judge Mukasey, now Attorney General Mukasey, says that he doesn't know whether waterboarding is torture or not, is he telling the truth? Does he really have no idea? Has he never examined the issue before? Is it really unclear to him? Is he being crazy or delusional? Or does he have a secret agenda? Well, I think the best way to analyze this question, whether FEMA or torture or winning the war in Iraq, is to examine how it all began. And to begin with a guy whose name was disclosed for the first time on 60 Minutes just a week ago, to begin with Rafet Alwan, also known as Curveball, and to analyze the analysts, to see who were the true believers and who were fostering the lies. And I don't think I'm giving anything away when I tell you that I believe Colin Powell was a true believer. I think that he legitimately believed, or was tricked into believing, that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. And when he gave that speech at the United Nations with his vial of anthrax, talking about Iraqi mobile biological weapons labs, he was, I think, truly fooled. I know this partly because I've talked to his chief of staff, Lawrence Wilkerson, myself. In fact, I'm going to be trying to bring Mr. Wilkerson to the Inside Scoop, and I think I will get him on the show within the next month or so, so you can hear it from his words. But what is the difference between a Colin Powell and a George Tenet? Between an analyst who gets the information second, third, fourth hand, and those that got it first hand? Between those that discounted the information and those like Dick Cheney, who were prowling the offices of the CIA trying to find out how to cherry-pick the information? I'll give you the story of Curveball right after these messages. Folks, if you want to call in and ask your question, don't stop. Don't hesitate to do so. Toll-free number 888-488-MARK or 877-4HEAD-ON. We'll be right back after this.
This is the Head-On Radio Network.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It wasn't exactly planes, trains, and automobiles on Head On with Bob Kincaid.
This is what the Bush administration Justice Department didn't want you to see back in 2001. They took out and they huffed the marker a little bit, and then they went, oh, cool. And they wiped out the name where it says the plane was chartered either by the Saudi Arabian royalty family or Osama bin Laden. Somebody's got to call up and say, good afternoon. Thank you for calling Ryan International Flights. How may I help you?
Hello. This is Osama bin Laden, and I would like to rent a Boeing 727. Do you have one handy?
Oh, just a moment. Let me check. It's a Mr. bin Laden wants to know if we got a 727. Do we, Harry, do we have a 727?
Yeah, we got a 727 just sitting there on the lot. Going cheap. There's nothing here. Nothing to look at. Keep moving.
Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain, the 6'7" Arab with the portable dialysis machine and the white robes.
Somebody's trying to make me stay, you know I've got to be moving on.
Head On with Bob Kincaid, weeknight, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern, only on the Head On Radio Network.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? If you did the unexpected? Would you feel scared? Proud? Relieved? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Or assisting an entrepreneur in Ukraine to launch her small business? Or creating a support group in Malawi for children orphaned by AIDS? What if you established your own path? One that others might follow? Would you rather make your own way? Or spend your life saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580. Or go to peacecorps.gov.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We're talking about the bubble of Washington, the bubble that the president lives in. As I'm sure you know, George Bush has proudly said that he doesn't read the newspapers. He doesn't listen to news sources. He listens. He probably tells, too. But he listens to what he wants to hear. He is surrounded by yes men and yes women. And they tell Bush exactly what he wants to hear. Don't bring me no bad news. If Eric Shinseki says that there's bad news, that we're going to need, triple the troops that we're going to send into Iraq, well, we'll make sure that Eric Shinseki gets a new job. Don't bring me no bad news. That, obviously, is how George Bush lives his life. That's why he doesn't read the newspapers or watch the news. We do know that in February of 2003, 1 month before the war in Iraq began, there is a man who I still think, and we'll get to this, I still think means well. Let's just put it that way. Okay? He's made tremendous mistakes, but I think he means well. His name is Colin Powell. He's the former Secretary of State. In February 2002, he appeared before the entire United Nations and showed his vial of anthrax and said that Iraq had mobile biological weapons labs. Now, he had read the National Intelligence Estimate. He knew, as anyone in Congress should know, anyone who reads the footnotes, that as high as the Deputy Director of Intelligence had said that Iraq does not have a nuclear program. That was all a joke, a scary joke. That was all Dick Cheney and Condoleezza Rice promising mushroom clouds. A side note, there really is only one weapon of mass destruction, my friends, and it's called a nuclear bomb. There's a hydrogen bomb, there's an atomic bomb, there's different kinds of nuclear weapons, but honestly, they are really the only weapons of mass destruction. The other so-called weapons of mass destruction, chemical weapons and biological weapons, they're nasty stuff, don't get me wrong, and they can kill. But they have nowhere the force of our conventional weapons. You can kill a lot more people with a 4,000-ton explosive, or heck, even with the kind of firebombs we dropped over Dresden, Germany in World War II, which are not chemical or biological, than you can with chemical or biological weapons. There was a sustained anthrax attack in the United States right after September 11th, It's amazing to me how everyone seems to forget that attack, but I remember it. I was in Congress. I was with Tom Daschle the day his office was attacked. And yes, they did try to kill, and yes, they killed probably more than a dozen people. I don't know that it reached two dozen. Between one and two dozen people. Under 30, more than 10. It's a nasty stuff. Chemical weapons are nasty stuff. In World War I, we just had Veterans Day, of course, celebrated yesterday. Veterans Day is a remembrance of the Armistice Day of November 11th, 1918. And in World War I was the first real sustained use of chemical weapons. Mustard gas was shot out of the trenches, and it's a nasty, nasty gas, and it does kill you. Of course, they found that if the wind blew the wrong way, the gas would come back in the faces of the people who shot it out. I'm not saying chemical or biological weapons are nice. What I'm saying is there should be no question in your mind that they are not weapons of mass destruction. After all, if the 4,000-ton bombs, bunker buster bombs that we're dropping every day over Iraq and Afghanistan are not considered weapons of mass destruction, those bombs that can kill hundreds of thousands, then how can we accuse a vial of anthrax, which can kill a couple dozen, of being that? Now, you know, I'm sure you can do better. I'm sure if you put your sarin just right, even though the sarin attack in the subway, again, definitely killed, far less than 100 people. I'm sure if you plan your chemical or biological weapon just right, you can kill more than 100, just like if you drop your explosive, you can. But they're not weapons of mass destruction. So if you define it right, and it's all in the definition, my friends, it's all in how you all the definition of is, right? It's all what the definition of WMD is. If you define weapons of mass destruction appropriately as weapons that can do more damage than, quote, conventional, unquote, weapons, the only weapon of mass destruction is a nuclear weapon. And everyone in the government who had read the National Intelligence Estimate knew or should have known Iraq had no nuclear weapons. In fact, the worst that they had was maybe a desire to have them, which probably includes virtually every country on Earth. They certainly didn't have the weapons. Now, back to biological and chemical weapons. The administration defined the Barlow to include biological and chemical weapons on purpose because they thought that that was something they could prove. And indeed, Colin Powell, February 2002, appeared before the United Nations and said that he had proof, unfettered proof, proof by an eyewitness, proof by an Iraqi chemical engineer, that trucks were going in and out of Iraq and getting biological weapons from a plant that they claimed was a seed purification plant. He described with pictures how the trucks would go in, where they would go out, and he said one reason why we know that this is a biological weapons plant is there was an accident in 1998 where 12 people died from biological agents. Colin Powell certainly seemed to be a true believer as he made his speech. We now know that the source, the entire source, the one person who gave all this information that Colin Powell gave as his crown jewels to his speech was a man by the name of Rafid Alwan, otherwise known as Curveball. The seed purification plant was at Jerf al-Nadaf, and he claimed it was a cover for biological weapons. Now, having done more research, and I certainly owe a lot of this to the 60 Minute story on this issue, on Curveball, we know that one of the first things the CIA did was go to their satellite photos. Heck, you can go to Google right now and see a picture of the plant. And you can see that there's a wall, a high wall around it, that would block where Curveball said that trucks were going in and out. So they brought the pictures to Curveball, to Rafid Alwan, and he said, it's a fake. Okay, well, that's possible. You certainly could, you know, build a wall on top and have a hole underneath, for example. He also said that there was a nuclear scientist by name of Basil Al-Sati. And Dr. Basil Al-Sati was, we know, someone who had been involved in the Iraqi nuclear program that existed in the late 70s, early 80s, before Israel destroyed it at the Al-Sayrak nuclear plant. And he said that Dr. Basil Al-Sati was there at the seed purification plant. And that was true. And so he can confirm that these were really secret biological weapons labs. Well, Dr. Basil Al-Sati had left Iraq, unbeknownst to Curveball, and was living in Great Britain. So they asked him about this, and he said, no, it really was a seed purification plant. And he said, if I truly designed a biological weapons facility for the Iraqi government, would they really have allowed me to emigrate? They took this information back to Kerrval, and Kerrval was uneasy, German intelligence reports, when he found out that Dr. Basil Alsati was allowed to emigrate. The CIA took this information in December 2002. The Central Group Chief, Margaret Hennick, said you can't trust this information. It hasn't been confirmed. This is ridiculous. This is just one man's word. You have to check this out. And she thought it was dismissed. One of the things she says in the 60 Minutes interview is that her superior said that Kerrval, Mr. Awan, was in a hazmat suit. And she pointed out that the person in the hazmat suit, you couldn't see their face. They were covered by the suit. Margaret said, I could be in that suit for all you know. She thought she'd gotten rid of the case. George Tenet was scheduled to brief George Bush. George Tenet, of course, the ex-intelligence chief who made a practice of pleasing his presidents by telling them what they wanted to hear. George Tenet never brought his presidents no bad news. And he gave an urgent telegram to Germany to find out what's going on, to find out if Kerrval could be trusted. He wrote and said, you have to respond within 48 hours because I'm telling the president in 48 hours. I want to put Kerrval on TV. I want him to tell the entire world what's going on. Or, if you want, we will send American officials. After all, we've never talked to the guy. We'll send American officials to debrief him to find out what he said. Well, he said to the Germans, you have to respond in 48 hours. And they did. 60 Minutes showed, in fact, that 48 hours later, the Germans had sent a cable directly to Tenet near George. They said that Kerrval, Rafid Awan, was plausible and believable, but unconfirmed. They could not confirm anything he'd said, and he won't talk to the Americans. Now, there's a blame war going on. George Tenet said he never saw the document. In the book, he blames the former CIA European division chief, Tyler Drumheller. Drumheller says, of course, Tenet saw the document. If he didn't, then it would be strange of his staff not to show it to him, and he had very good staff. And we know, in fact, that at least according to one account, George Bush's, George Tenet said later on, based on Kerrval alone, it was a slam dunk. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about what happened after Colin Powell's speech when the United Nations inspectors decided to check out what Kerrval had said, whether it was true. If you want to dial in, the toll-free number is 877-4-HEAD-ON. We'll be right back after this.
This is the Head-On Radio Network, The Horn.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 3/4. All you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. Here's how out of it Bush really is. At a press conference earlier this week, he was asked about the Iraq War, and this is what he said. If you're an Iraqi, you'd be saying, God, I love freedom. Somehow, I don't think that's what most Iraqis are saying to themselves right now. Certainly not the 75,000 to more than a million Iraqi civilians who've died as a result of Bush's reckless war, or the hundreds of thousands of Iraqis who've been wounded, certainly not the families of all those killed or wounded, or the 2 to 3 million Iraqis who've been rendered into refugees. Certainly not the 20,000 Iraqis the U.S. and the Maliki government are holding without charges, and certainly not those who've been tortured. And not the women of Iraq either, who are much less free today than they were under Saddam. But Bush is beyond callous to the casualties in Iraq, for he thinks he's doing God's work, which he says is to deliver the gift of freedom around the world. And if some people die under the wheels of the delivery truck, well, that must be part of God's plan, too. Thus does he sleep at night, untroubled by the wailing in Iraq. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We're talking about the White House bubble, trying to figure out whether the policymakers are intentionally lying to us, or are they delusional? Are they crazy to believe this kind of thing? What is the evidence that they knew prior to the Iraqi war about so-called weapons of mass destruction? Whenever I debate Republicans, people like Mike Lane and others, he says, well, everybody knew there were weapons of mass destruction. Everybody knew that. First of all, everyone didn't know that. We know for a fact that no one believed, based on intelligence, there were any nuclear weapons in Iraq. The worst that people thought was maybe he wanted nuclear weapons, which should surprise nobody. But biological weapons, well, the evidence came from curveball. And 3 days after Colin Powell's speech at the United Nations, UN inspectors went to the seed factory, the seed purification center, Jerf al-Nadaf, the exact place that Curveball said was a secret mobile bioweapons lab. Yes, it's true that in 1998, Iraq kicked out the inspectors. That's when Bill Clinton bombed the last stocks of chemical and biological weapons to destroy them in response to that. But in 2002, as George Bush conveniently forgets, and he hopes the American people will conveniently forget, even though it happened only 5 years ago, the inspectors were allowed to go wherever they wanted to go. Iraq wanted to try to prevent a war. And 3 days after Colin Powell's speech, the inspectors came there, and they found that the walls from the satellite photos were indeed there. There were no hidden doors. There were no holes. There were no secret tunnels. There was no place where massive trucks with biological weapons facilities could dock up to this place. The UN inspector, Jim Corcoran, says he told 60 Minutes that even then, when the White House was not satisfied, he thought, let's go do another surprise check. They may have expected the first one. They don't expect the second one. So 2 weeks later, he went back and didn't just find the walls, but he found no trace of any biological agent. He did tests in the soil. If you have a biological weapons facility, there are trace amounts that show up in tests. Guess what? He didn't find any. Still, we didn't interview Curveball. We didn't interview Rafed Alwan. Still, despite the fact the Germans said the reports were unconfirmed, we went to war in Iraq. What 60 Minutes shows is that in 2004, we finally got our interview with Rafed Alwan. Here's the epilogue to the story. The CIA finally did interview Curveball, and they showed him the wall and the pictures of the wall that would have prevented the trucks from coming in the way that he described. And he said, you doctored these. And when the CIA said, no, we didn't doctor these. These are actual pictures. He refused to say anything further. Here's what we now know about Curveball. He was not in the top of his class as an Iraqi engineer, as he claims. In fact, his grades were in the 50s out of 100, what we might call an F+. under the American system. He had worked, though. He had worked at Jerf al-Naduf as a seed purification plant. In fact, we know that Dr. Basil Alsati, who he said was there, was there. And Dr. Alsati has figured out from records that he was there and helping to build the place. But he had to have left in 1995, because that's when the place was built. The wall, the one that he didn't recognize, was built in 1997. And the accident that he said happened in Iraq happened in 1998. But he wasn't in Iraq in 1998. No, after he left his job at the seed purification plant in 95, he worked at Babel Television Communications, 60 Minutes found out, and there he stole expensive equipment. There was an arrest warrant issued for Curveball, and they dropped it when he paid back the money for the equipment he had stolen. He then tried homemade cosmetics for a while, but left Iraq prior to 98, prior to the incident where he claimed 12 people were killed. Went all over the Middle East, wound up in Germany, and like any good immigrant, wanted asylum because he wanted what we would call a green card. He wanted to work in Germany. He wanted to be a legal immigrant. So he wanted asylum. And in his asylum application, he claimed to be an Iraqi engineer involved in biological weapons labs. That's the story of Curveball. That's the facts. Now the question comes. Why was he taken seriously enough to go to war in Iraq? Dave from California, welcome to Inside Scoop. How are you, Dave?
Hey, you hear me?
I hear you fine.
Okay, great. You're reviewing a lot of this, Mark, like it's still a question as to what was their purpose. And you, I know, recall that they spelled out their plan for the Middle East in PNAC years ago. And
that's
you know
true. In 97 and 98, in the Project for New American Century, you had Wolfowitz, you had Daniel Pearl, you had Dick Cheney, you had Donald Rumsfeld. All of them were arguing back in the 90s about how important Iraq was for our oil supplies. And then, of course, there's the famous map that I think still gets too little attention of January 30th, 2001, 10 days after George Bush takes power. The map mentioned by Ron Susskind in his book, The Price of Loyalty, which basically is interviews of the former Treasury Secretary, Paul O'Neill, where Paul O'Neill has the actual maps of Iraq divided into various oil field districts. This goes to this company, this goes to that company, a map so secret that the CIA tried to prosecute Paul O'Neill for showing the map until they found out that they'd actually given him permission the time before. And then, of course, there's the Downing Street memo, which talks about fixing the facts around the intelligence. So, yes, Dave, there's lots of evidence that this happened long before Curveball. But make your point.
Well, that certainly is a big part of it. You may even recall, if you don't like to, that they spelled out that we will need a new Pearl Harbor type of event to get the people to support these invasions. Yes, we leap to the Downing Street memo, and there we have them on paper conspiring how they're going to fix the evidence to make it look like they've got a justified invasion. It's a
fix
all
the fact around the policy.
Yeah, it's all about big profits for the most greedy of corporate special interests, and that's happening. The Treasury of the United States is shifted into the pockets of Bechtel and Lockheed Martin and Halliburton, and those big corporations that are overcharging our Treasury a thousand times more than they should, they're keeping the money, and that's what this is all about. Everything about this administration is shifting great wealth from the working people into the pockets of the very richest, greediest people in the country, in the world, I guess. And that's
no question about it. President Eisenhower warned us about the military-industrial complex, and I think he was warning us about George W. Bush, as they make huge fortunes off of no big contracts.
Well, I just thought for sure that we'd bring it to that level. I think the evidence is overwhelming. Connect the dots and there's no more questions. I mean,
but here's what I think is the question, Dave. Here's what I think is the question. I want to divide the administration and Congress, for that matter, into two groups. the difference between, let's say, the delusional and the evil, and I think there is a difference. That's how I began this broadcast. The difference between those who truly believed the lies and those who knew the lies were false and put them out anyway. And I would say that Colin Powell was in the first category. I don't believe that he knew that these were fakes. I think that Dick Cheney knew. What's that?
He should have known.
You think he could have known?
He should have known. He had access to all
the
intelligence.
Well, I think, I think he should have known, too. I mean, Colin Powell has said that his biggest mistake in his entire public career was that speech at the United Nations. I don't think he would have said that if he were trying to put one over on people. And then once he knew and found out it was false, I think he had an obligation to come clean. He did eventually leave the administration, and he argues that he thought he could do more good from the inside than the outside. I understand that argument, but I respectfully disagree. I think he could have done more good had he come out publicly and let everyone know that this entire war was based on a lie. But the interesting thing about Curveball, to me, is how little it has to do with Curveball. I mean, this particular guy trying to get asylum in Germany makes up a story that ends up leading to a war that causes hundreds of thousands to die, causes tens of thousands to be wounded, millions to be exiled. Can we blame all this all on Curveball? I say no. I think Curveball was doing what all kinds of people do. They lie in order to get asylum. What happened was Curveball was the fixing that they needed of facts around the policy. They were determined, as you say, Dave, to invade Iraq before Bush even took power. They had planned it out 10 days after he was in office. And the Pearl Harbor they needed wasn't decided yet. They had to find, now when September 11th happened, they grabbed that. And when Curveball happened, they grabbed that too. But they didn't interview him, and they didn't wonder why he didn't want to talk to Americans. Well, obviously the reason he didn't want to talk to Americans is because he knew that his story didn't hold water. So of course he didn't want to talk to Americans. So the story, at the end of the day, isn't really about Curveball. I agree with you, Dave. It's about the policymakers who were looking for anything they could find to justify this war. And that's what they did, and frankly, that's what George Tenet did and was known for doing. He was Mr. Yes Man. He was Mr. You want to hear. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I may have oversimplified it, Mark, because I think there are those who just get to it. There are those who manufacture and mix the Kool-Aid, but there is another group, maybe, and that's those who clearly suspect and have reasons not to believe, but look the other way.
Yes, there's the mixtures of the Kool-Aid and the drinkers of the Kool-Aid, and
yeah.
And at some point maybe you could argue it doesn't matter, since they both end up doing suicidal damage to the United States. But I think the story of Curveball is a real lesson here. You know, when the Maine back in the Spanish-American War, the USS Maine blew up. It was a boiler accident. You know, it happened on ships in the late 19th century. The boiler that misfired, they put too much coal in it, and the ship blew up. But we wanted war with Spain at the time, so we claimed that, indeed, it was the Spanish who blew up the ship. Remember, the Maine was the rallying cry. We went to war in the Spanish-American War of 1898. In the Gulf of Tonkin in Vietnam, it's still not known exactly what happened. It's believed the CIA may have done something. But in any case, we wanted an incident. We wanted to justify a war. Heck, when Adolf Hitler invaded Poland, he manufactured an incident on the border between Germany and Poland that Poland didn't cause at all, and that was what he used to go to war. When you want to do something, you're going to look for an incident. And my fear, as much as I am concerned, and I admit to having concern, unlike some on the left, I admit to having concern about the possibility of Iran at some point in the future getting nuclear weapons. I don't think they have them now. I think that evidence is obvious. But I do worry about that concern in the future. But I'm concerned that some kind of incident will be manufactured, or some kind of ambiguous incident, more likely, kind of like Curveball or the Maine, will be used to justify a war that's being fought for larger geopolitical purposes, and not really about nuclear weapons at all.
I think Cheney's new world order, global domination, is running a little behind schedule, but I love the program. Mark. Stay with the good work.
I always appreciate your calls, Dave. Thanks for calling in. You know, Dick Cheney, to me, is the classic example of someone who's not crazy, who's not delusional, but is pure evil. And I think that a distinction has to be made between a Dick Cheney and a Colin Powell. That doesn't mean that I'm justifying anything Colin Powell did. One could argue, as Dave did, that Colin Powell was smart enough, sophisticated enough, to check out the information, that he knew who he was dealing with, that he shouldn't just have relied upon the Director of National Intelligence. But as his Chief of Staff, Lawrence Wilkerson, points out, and as I said, I'm going to do my best to get him here on the Inside Scoop within the next month and give you a chance to ask him some good questions. But as Lawrence Wilkerson has pointed out, you know, that his job was to be Secretary of State, not to be Director of Intelligence, and he's supposed to be able to believe what the intelligence provided. And George Tenet apparently said it was a slam dunk. Well, Curveball apparently is still in Germany today, still trying to get asylum there. But the issue, of course, is much larger than he. The issue is the bubble of the White House. If you want to call in and comment as Dave did, there's a few minutes left. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Bob Kincaid, I didn't know if you had any comments on this. We had talked earlier about the difference between delusion and evil. I didn't know if you wanted to add 2 cents.
Well, Mark, as you noted, it started out with a little, you know, idle banter back and forth before the program, as we often do. And I remarked to you that so much of this, and I talk about this a good bit on the show from time to time, I have found that a fella can pretty well live by W.C. Fields. You can't cheat an honest man. These people, you say that, you mentioned that the Curveball didn't want to talk to the Americans. You know, I get the idea we didn't really want to talk to him that much either.
Well, the interesting thing is that we did interview him in 04. We begin the war in 03, and then a year later we actually have an interview with him. Now, why didn't we say, tell Curveball we can't use his information unless we talk to him? Why, if Curveball were telling the truth, would he have any fear of talking to the Americans? What reason could he possibly have for being willing to talk to the Germans and not being willing to talk to the Americans?
Didn't the Germans warn us that he was drunker than Adam's off ox?
You know, you mentioned that, Bob, and I was looking for evidence. I think that comes from, there's a book by Eric Drobin, I think is his name, who talks about that. It wasn't in the 60 Minutes thing, though, and so
The Germans sent a communique to the United States saying, we have determined Curveball no longer reliable.
That's true.
And they mentioned in that communique, if I recall correctly, I don't have it at my fingertips, they mentioned in that communique that he was having substance abuse problems. We invaded Iraq on the word of one of the boys under the bridge drinking the screw top wine, Mark.
Yeah, that's true.
And we didn't, you know, you're right. We talked to him in 2004. In other words, we went to him when it began to look like, you know, no WMDs, nothing, nothing's beeping. Yeah, nothing's beeping. Nothing's glowing. Nothing. We got all these expensive chemical weapon suits, and we don't have to. We're humping them around all over the desert, and we don't have to use them. And you know, dude, can you tell us where anything might be? That's why they talked to him in 2004. That was an act of desperation.
Yeah. By the way, it's Bob Drogan is the author. I was just looking that up. The person who talks about him being drunk. What's interesting is the conflict between Tenet and Tyler Drumheller, the CIA chief in Europe. One of them is lying. There's no question one of them is lying. Drumheller says in the 60 Minutes article that, this letter came from German intelligence, and that Tenet had asked for a response in 48 hours. They came in 48 hours. He must have read it. Tenet says not only did he not read it, but Drumheller hid the document from him. Now, think about, in a he said kind of situation, you got to figure out who's telling the truth. What possible reason could Drumheller have to hide a document from his boss? It just doesn't make any sense. Why would Drumheller, who's a skeptic, not show George Tenet this letter?
Well, there's always plausible deniability.
Well.
And then there's the catch-all, the catch-all excuse that has been promulgated by none other than Tom Tomorrow. I don't know if you saw the strip on conservative Jones Boy Detective. And it's the same thing that comes out of Bill O'Reilly. Everything that we complain about, whether it's torture, habeas corpus, illegal wiretapping, domestic spying, the dummied-up, ginned-up war in Iraq, the stolen election, it's all because we hate George W. Bush. So,
yeah.
Well, Drumheller probably withheld that information because he hated George W. Bush and wanted to make George W. Bush look bad.
You know, it's amazing because they say that about Joe Wilson, Valerie Plame Wilson. Joe Wilson, of course, was hired by Republicans, was hired by George Bush's father.
Sure, and they said it about Richard
Reagan.
And they said it about Richard Clark.
Richard Clark was hired by Ronald Reagan. Paul O'Neill, Treasury Secretary, hired by George W. Bush, was the Treasury
Secretary.
He's
a hater. He's a hater.
Ross Wilkerson, Republican Chief of Staff for Colin Powell.
Hater.
Loyal Republican.
Hater.
They all hate Bush.
They're Bush haters. It's pathetic. It truly is pathetic, Mark.
But the question is, are the people saying Bush hater? Do they really, truly believe in their heart of hearts that liberals are making this stuff up because they hate Bush? Or are they saying it because they think that there are other people out there in the world who are so stupid, who are such idiots, that they'll actually believe this ridiculous lie? Which is it? When someone says...
It is the latter. It is the latter in large part. It is also a fact, and I wish we had horn psychologist Rick Goodner handy. He could explain this a little bit better than I. These people are behaving in classic addict fashion, okay? And there is something called magical thinking, Mark. I've read about it, seen it referenced. When you're dealing with people in an addictive situation, they will engage in magical thinking, which allows them to avoid having their own fallacies and delusions confronted.
Well, everyone does this. I mean, just to be clear, there are people on the left that do it too. I've said, and I know some listeners disagree with me, but I've said that those that believe that, there's evidence, because I haven't seen any, that George Bush caused September 11th versus profited from, no question he profited from it, misused it, and all of that. But, that he planted explosives in the buildings, I think that's also part of that magical evidence theory, that the idea that people want to believe it's true, they know that Bush is evil, therefore all evil acts must come from him. I would say no, there's plenty of evil outside of this administration.
Yeah, there's
well
free agent evil.
There's plenty of evil to go around. But I think that people do try to create a situation to back up their beliefs. And I think we have to be very careful about that. That's one of the reasons why on my show I'm very careful to give the evidence, to give the sources of the evidence, to say where it's coming from. Because, heck, my bias is clear. At least you should know from whose source I'm giving it. That's why when the source is Lawrence Wilkerson and Paul O'Neill and Richard Clark and Eric Shinseki and all these loyal Republicans, that's when you know, maybe they are telling the truth.
Yeah, and I agree that is beneficial, but sorry, professional host here, can't talk.
Well, you're my guest for the moment, Bob.
Oh, okay. That goes back to your original premise, though. It all turns back to this question of willful delusion, willful
right.
Self-delusion. And there's also a confluence there with their knowledge, the aliens, whatever, Republicans, they know these warmongering neocons, whatever we care to hang on them for the way of a name, they know that the statistical empirical evidence tends to point to the fact that presidential elections are determined by 1% and 2% margins. And as a consequence
of
that,
lately they are.
As a consequence of that, Bill Clinton and George Bush the first,
Well, George Bush the first won by significant margin.
No, I'm talking about when he lost to Clinton.
Oh, right. Okay, fair enough.
Right.
92, 2000, and 04, you're right. 96 and 88 weren't close.
Right. But anyway, if you're dealing with that kind of a margin, you know that all that you don't have to convince that many people. And there is no IQ test for exercising the franchise. if you can get a couple of million people out to the polls who believe either A, the liberals just hate George Bush and we're fighting a great patriotic war in Iraq, or B, that Hillary Clinton killed Vince Foster, you can win a presidential election. If you combine it with things like vote caging and yada, 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 they know this. And so,
how do you distinguish between the people who are spreading the lie and the blooming idiots who are believing it? How do you distinguish between the intelligent person who knows it's false and is evilly spreading this lie and the manipulated individual who's just... I mean, there's really only two options. Either you're evil or you're an idiot. When someone tells you, oh, you're just saying that because you hate George Bush, there's only two options. The person telling you that is either evil or an idiot. If they're evil, they're a propagandist trying to tell you this because they think that if they tell enough people, the idiots will believe it. As Dave puts it, are they selling the Kool-Aid or are they drinking it?
Well,
does it matter?
You know, look at it geographically. You know what rolls downhill, right, Mark?
Yes.
Look at where the person is standing on the hill.
That's a good way to find out whether they're dishing it out or whether they're taking it.
Right.
Right. I mean, that's a fair way to determine it. I agree. If they're inside the Beltway dishing it outside the Beltway, they're probably of the evil variety. If they're living in Muncie, Indiana, and have their Rush Limbaugh radio on and are spouting it, they're of the idiot variety.
Right.
It's the person in between that's difficult to figure out. But at some point, I guess it doesn't matter. That's why we simply give facts and tell people the way it was. And one of the most interesting things that Drumheller said in the 60 Minutes interview, and it really wasn't very much emphasized, he said, yes, it's true that Curveball existed, that he was this low-level Iraqi engineer, that he was at a seed purification plant, and he was the source for all of this stuff. But if he hadn't existed, they would have found somebody else.
Yes.
They were so determined to go to war, they jumped on this, but they were so
busy. Look at the amount of money we paid to Ahmed Chalabi.
Oh, my God. Think of all the trucks full of cash.
Shrink-wrapped. Thrown about on the tarmac at Baghdad International Airport. They played football with them.
You know, it's hard to carry that. No man, I don't care how strong
you are. 18 trailer truckloads. 18 trailer truckloads of shrink-wrapped $100 bills.
You know, $1 million is heavy. I mean, if you ever seen the World Series of Poker where they put out, you know, $10 million on the table, that's just $10 million. That's a lot of cash.
Yeah, that's no $9 billion.
$1 billion is 600 times that. It's 600 tables of the World Series.
You know, Mark, as someone who works to keep the bills paid here at the Horn, I can tell you it's hard work, but it's work I'd be willing to do hauling that cash around.
You know, I just gonna say I'd do it for just one little shrink wrapped container.
Yeah,
just one handful.
And that's why we'll never get ahead, Mark. There is not enough larceny in our souls.
Too low.
There is not enough larceny in our souls, Mark Levine.
We're coming up against the hour. Thank you, Bob, for joining me at the end there.
Always a joy, Mark.
And I hope to you enjoy the inside scoop on Curveball and ask yourself the question when anyone lies to you, whether or not they're doing it because they know it's a lie and they're trying to trick you, or whether they're simply crazy and delusional. It's a fair question to ask about the White House or anyone else in your life. This is Mark Levine, signing off.
This is the Quality News Network. More than 3,000 people jailed under Pakistan's emergency rule were released today. The prisoners were freed soon after judges yesterday overruled legal challenges to President Pervez Musharraf's re-election. The Bush administration has been pressuring Musharraf to end the emergency rule. The U.S. Supreme Court will decide the fate of the handgun ban in Washington, D.C. The ban was struck down and seen as incompatible with the Second Amendment. Gun control advocates say the Second Amendment was intended to ensure states could maintain militias. The United Nations gave a dire warning today that the world risks a resurgence of AIDS if countries let their guard down. UN health officials say evidence shows the AIDS epidemic is creeping back in countries that have become less careful. Each day, there are nearly 7,000 new HIV infections and over 5,000 AIDS-related deaths. The U.S. accepted an Iraqi invitation to hold new talks with Iran about the security situation in Iraq. It would be the third round of talks between Ryan Crocker, the U.S. ambassador to Iraq, and his Iranian counterpart. The Federal Reserve reported today that it expects slower economic growth and an increase in unemployment next year due to the housing slump and credit crunch. The nation's number two buyer and guarantor of home loans lost $2 billion in the third quarter. Freddie Mac announced that it must raise fresh capital to meet regulatory requirements. In France, civil servants, teachers, and hospital staff will join striking transit workers for a day to protest government reforms. The nationwide strike, now in its seventh day, is costing France around $500 million daily. Several Blackwater security guards have been subpoenaed by a federal grand jury as part of a new investigation into the shooting deaths of 17 Iraqis. It's the latest investigation of the September incident. Last week, the FBI determined 14 of those deaths were unjustified. In Baghdad today, 5 people were killed, 11 wounded in morning attacks. The director of Iraq's Geological Survey was gunned down on his way to work.